Before we begin, everyone do me a favor.
Thanks.
Read a little thing I wrote called the Federalist Papers.
Yeah.
I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash trapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter.
Nope.
I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Oh, welcome. You're listening to the Tokens Radio Show. It's Tuesday, March the 25th. I'm Christy.
And I'm Linda.
And we're broadcasting from the KCNR studios on the dial at 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. And we're streaming online at KCNR1460.com.
Yep.
Yeah, follow us on X at Tokens Radio Show for updates and commentary. And we have got Ben in the studio tonight. Good evening.
Good evening. Great producer.
Yeah. Are you following Bitcoin nowadays?
Not yet.
Ah, we'll get you hooked.
I need to start working a little bit more before I'm allowed to do that.
Oh, you're allowed to do it even if you're not partaking.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No, I do follow what it's doing, but
right
I have not bought any yet.
That's okay.
We'll get you there.
You know,
it's easy peasy.
We finally orange-pilled a family member.
Did you?
Yeah, completely a naysayer. Has been for, 4 years? And a few months ago, my husband had reached out to this person and said, hey, you know, we're over 100,000. What do you think about that now?
What do you think about that Ponzi scheme now?
Exactly. So guess what? Over the weekend, he reached out to us and wanted to go ahead and get some Bitcoin. So we
cool.
set him up with Swan Bitcoin, told him to go on over there, and he filled out their form. They got right back to him and got him all squared away, and now he's on Set It and Forget It.
We love that.
Isn't that great?
I know. I got to pull some of mine off, I think. I got to go in there and check it, you know.
So I gave him a call and congratulated him. And it was funny because just the conversation we were having about what are sats and, you know, will I ever be able to use this for myself? And it's like, yeah, you know, this is, you know, for our age. You know, he's 71 now. He's going, I don't know how much this will be around for me, but definitely for my kids. And it's like, that's why.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, when you're our age, it's just like, this is about the kids, right?
Yeah. I keep, I'm surprised with my clients. A lot of clients, there's a few, still don't realize that you can buy at any amount.
Right.
And I still come across that a lot. No, you don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin.
Exactly. Our friend, our person there, bought $500 worth.
Oh, cool.
And then I told him, hey, you know, why not, $5-$10 a day or whatever, or $20 a week or whatever you can do.
And then I always go back to, you remember the guy that bought the car?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I use a real simple analogy. You know, I don't know what the numbers were when he did it, but I go, you know, he sold, let's say the Bitcoin was worth $10,000. He sold 5 of the Bitcoin, and he bought this car for $50,000, okay? Well, now Bitcoin's worth $100,000. Yeah, now his car is $500,000 purchase. Kind of puts a different perspective on it.
That's right. Well, you know, interestingly, guess what we're going to talk about is Bitcoin and digital money tonight and what's happening with it right now. Kind of like what Linda's talking about, why it matters to all of us.
Right.
We have some interesting clips. They're kind of short ones for what we've been running lately. And we're going to talk a little bit what's going on in China's economy to what Donald Trump is saying about crypto. And then we're going to talk a little bit about these Bitcoin bonds and what countries are experimenting with them. And then we'll also hear from Michael Saylor. He's one of course, Bitcoin's biggest fans, as you well know. And he believes that this digital currency is changing everything about how money works. And I couldn't agree more. So stick around. Whether you own Bitcoin or just curious about it, you know, about what all the fuss is about.
And to learn. We're still learning. That's why we do it.
That's right. So before we kick things off, let's get a market update and a word from our sponsor.
All right, we can do that. Speaking of Bitcoin, we are at 87,676. IBIT, $50.14. ETH, 2,073. XRP, 245. Mm-hmm. And MicroStrategy, 342. And our sponsors, sponsor, of course, is our friends at the Queen of Dragons, home of fresh and local sponsors. Oh, I guess I should have read that. Okay. Our friends at Queen of Dragons is our sponsors for tonight's show. They offer carefully cultivated, unique strands with elevated experiences, exotic genetics, and robust flavors. The Queen of Dragons is known for fair pricing, stringent quality control, and knowledgeable staff. Shop their selection and schedule a delivery at www.thequeenofdragons.com or stay connected by following at Queen Dragons on X or call in 530-276-9771.
Yeah, little surprise there, but on their website, you can go in and schedule a delivery. They've been doing delivery for a while, but
I guess
their
website, never thought about it. Yeah.
So there you go.
All right.
We thought we would update you with another way of being able to get a hold of them.
Great. Always good to have that in your pocket.
Yeah.
Okay, Bitcoin's been buzzing this week. It usually is. Big players called Wells, you've heard us talk about them before, grabbed 62,000 coins this month, keeping the price steady at around 83,000 to maybe 87,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even with the shaky trade vibes and high prices for stuff like gas and groceries. On March 20th, President Trump made history by saying he'd speak at a huge crypto event in New York. His team even floating the idea of the U.S. hoarding Bitcoin like gold.
Yeah,
we like that. That day, 280 million flowed into Bitcoin funds, nudging the price towards $86,000. BlackRock's Bitcoin stash at $53 billion. Imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
But by March 22nd, it had dipped to $83,800 as folks got jittery about the economy. Kind of made things do a lot of tweaking there. Strategy used to be MicroStrategy snagged 130 more coins for $10.7 million, doubling down to Bitcoin. Meanwhile, North Korea is sitting on a pile of it, probably from hacking, which has people worried about sketchy moves.
Yeah.
No, not North Korea.
I think they're a pretty wealthy little poor country.
And like BlackRock, it's amazing. They were against us, now they're with us, and now they're like all in, aren't they?
They sure are. Well, meanwhile, in the United States, Senator Cynthia Lummis, she's pushing a wild plan to ditch gold for Bitcoin, and Trump's all about making America the crypto king. BlackRock's boss thinks it could hit 500,000 to 700,000 someday, but some say it might crash after 125,000. We've heard all of these,
the numbers
predictions.
Been all over it.
I don't know if we have a crash, it's going to go back up. So this volatility is good as this asset develops. Globally, it's a toss-up. South Korea's like, nah, we're not doing this. It's too risky, while North Carolina might toss 10% of its cash into Bitcoin. Russia's using it to dodge sanctions with China and India. And the United States just okayed Tornado Cash, a crypto privacy tool, cool for some, sketchy for others. And over the last 3 days, Bitcoin kept rocking. On March 22nd, it sat at $83,800. After the Tornado Cash news and Trump vowed to make the U.S. a Bitcoin superpower, on March 23rd, BlackRock bought 105 million more. And today, on March 25th, it hit $87,000. After a tariff scare faded, still bouncing between $86,000 and $87,000. So Bitcoin Bitcoin's wild big buyers, Trump and countries, are all in the mix, and it's hovering around 87,000 at this point, and it's anyone's guess where it's headed from here.
That's for sure. So now we're going to go to Peter St. Ong. This is a subject, you know, when we were prepping for the show, I had never really thought about too much. China's economy is struggling with too many factories, making too many products, while growth slows down. A situation made worse by Trump's tariffs. Peter St. Ong explains how China's attempt to solve this by flooding foreign markets with exports is angering trading partners and driving away international investors.
Mm.
It's a little bit different twist on than what you think sometimes.
Well, they've been flooding the foreign markets for years. I mean, we've been buying their crap for, I don't know, since the Nixon years.
Yeah, and so many people are like, oh, well, we won't have anything because, you know, we have to rely on China.
We have to have cheap crap.
Yeah, it's not quite exactly that way. He believes Trump's policies and America's most business-friendly environment could lead many companies to abandon China for the U.S., further weakening China's economy position. Wasn't it last week we did, you know, they're selling and we're buying. You know,
right.
We're the biggest consumer. Remember that.
Right, right.
So here we go.
China is terrified that Donald Trump could turn it into a Japan-style zombie economy. According to the Wall Street Journal, China is, quote, right to worry. Because Trump's aggressive tariffs on China, with more to come on April 2nd, are hitting when China's economy was already reeling from failed central planning. With trillions of overcapacity dumped into state favorites from green energy and EVs to semiconductors and commercial aircraft. To illustrate, by 2019, China had 500 electric vehicle makers. 80% have already gone bust, with 100 still to go. This overcapacity is crashing prices in China, which are actually falling in deflation. While estimates peg China's economy limping along at just over 2% growth, a far cry from double digits a decade ago. Ominously, after China's youth employment soared past 20%, Beijing stopped reporting it. Now, China's response to overcapacity has been dumping abroad, which is why you can get $4 shirts on Temu. That's pissing off trade partners, but it's barely making a dent, with tens of thousands more Chinese factories at risk, which would mean millions more jobs lost. Last year, China had nearly 1,000, quote, dissent events, riots. Millions of unemployed factory workers would be gasoline to that fire. Donald Trump is now feeding China's house of cards into the wood chipper. A few weeks ago, he hiked tariffs to between 17.5% and 35%, with more to come on April 2nd when Trump goes nuclear with his reciprocal tariffs. Even China permeable J.P. Morgan admitted, quote, we felt tariffs were a negotiating tactic rather than a structural change. We appeared to be wrong. Now, I mentioned in previous videos that Trump's dream of bringing production back to America is actually possible if business taxes and red tape are tamed. Doge is aiming directly at both, while Trump wants to repeal the entire income tax. Given America's huge economy, we're one quarter of the entire global economy. If you nestle that under a big, beautiful tariff umbrella and cut costs and red tape, you get a flood of even Chinese companies wanting to make it in America. Beijing will be bribing them to stay. Of course, it's not just Trump. Doing business in China has always been like dating a stripper. Looks good, but there's an awful lot of drama. Beijing forces you to train your competitors and share your trade secrets, so-called forced technology transfer. Its regulations change depending who you know, with foreigners at the back of the line. Occasionally, it rests your managers as hostages if it's upset with your country. Thanks to all this, foreign investment into China has collapsed 96% since Xi Jinping took office, actually turning negative, more leaving than coming, with a record $168 billion outflow last year out of China. There's even talk that China could be turning into a Japan-style zombie economy thanks to government misallocation of capital. Bond markets say it already has. China's President Xi appears incapable of handling the challenge. He's the most anti-business Chinese leader since Mao, with a decade of low growth to show for it. Worse, his instinctive combativeness is going to create fireworks with Donald Trump, who's currently luring China's most important ally, Russia, out of its orbit. Sadly for the Chinese people, Xi's greatest achievement is the police state he built, so at age 71, there's no cavalry coming. Read the rest with charts and all the gory details at prophecyandhonest.com.
So what we just heard from Peter is that China's economic problems affect all of us.
Mm-hmm.
They built too many factories, making too many products, And when they dump all those cheap goods into other countries, it hurts businesses everywhere. Yeah. This is making many countries think twice about doing business with good old China. With all this uncertainty in global economy, people are naturally searching for safer places to put their money and protect whatever they earned. And that is true.
Yeah, it sure is. I didn't know she was 71. But in any case, wasn't Peter extraordinarily snarky this week?
Yeah. I really like the stripper analogy there.
Well, and that's where digital assets like Bitcoin enter the picture, as Peter were alluding to. And this is as countries and investors examine alternatives to traditional systems, Bitcoin and cryptocurrency is gaining serious attention at the highest levels of government. I mean, it's almost talked about every day. In fact, the current administration has been developing specific policies around digital assets. Let's hear directly from President Trump at the Blockworks Digital Asset Summit last week, where he outlines his vision for America's role in the cryptocurrency space, including plans for strategic Bitcoin reserve and regulatory reforms. And here we are with President Trump.
A very big hello to everyone at the Blockworks Digital Assets Summit. It's an honor to speak with you about how the United States is going to dominate crypto and the next generation of financial technologies. And it's not going to be easy, but we're way ahead. Just 2 weeks ago, we hosted the first ever White House Digital Asset Summit, bringing together many of the world's top leaders in crypto for a conversation led by our White House AI and crypto czar, David Sacks, who's a fantastic and very brilliant guy. That same week, I signed an order creating the brand new strategic Bitcoin reserve and the U.S. digital asset stockpile, which will allow the federal government to maximize the value of its holdings instead of foolishly selling them for a fraction of their long-term value, which is exactly what Biden did. He got a fraction of their value. We're ending the last administration's regulatory war on crypto and Bitcoin, and that includes stopping the lawless Operation Chokepoint 2.0. Operation Chokepoint went beyond regulation, and I mean far beyond. It was a form of lawfare through government weaponization. Frankly, it was a disgrace. But as of January 20th, 2025, all of that is over. I've also called on Congress to pass landmark legislation creating simple, common-sense rules for stablecoins and market structure. With the right legal framework, institutions large and small will be liberated to invest, innovate, and take part in one of the most exciting technological revolutions in modern history. It's so big, it's, I think, as big as you can get. Pioneers like you will be able to improve our banking and payment system and promote greater privacy, safety, security, and wealth for American consumers and businesses alike. You will unleash an explosion of economic growth, and with the dollar-backed stablecoins, you'll help expand the dominance of the U.S. dollar, and many, many years to come, it'll be at the top, and that's where we want to keep it. We only want to keep it at the top, always. I can already see that the energy and passion of the crypto community is the kind of spirit that built our country, and it is exciting to watch as you invent the future of finance. And right here, it's going to be right here in the USA, the good old USA. Together, we will make America the undisputed Bitcoin superpower and the crypto capital of the world. Thank you. Good luck. God bless America.
Yes. So really what Trump is saying here is that, you know, the government is changing its mind about crypto. That's really what it is. Instead of treating Bitcoin and other digital currencies like they're suspicious or dangerous like the prior administration, Trump wants to welcome them with open arms. It's like going from putting up with keep out signs to rolling out the welcome mat. It's a trip. This friendlier approach can mean more people creating new crypto businesses and technologies right here in America. Very much like Trump's technology company, where they have created their own stablecoin. I don't know, a little slight digression here.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it goes to show that our leaders are starting to see crypto not as some weird internet fad, but as something that might become as normal as using dollars in the future. And it might have something to do that this administration is much more about freedom and sovereignty than maybe the last ones we've had.
Right. And that's kind of his whole, the thing with Trump is the freedom piece. That's what he's been striving for all this time.
Right.
I mean, just like we were saying about the tariffs in China, you don't think of it. We don't have to have, you know, it's kind of a two-way street. They need us, and we need them until we get our factories up and running.
It's a global thing.
And a global thing, yeah.
Sure is.
So with that, I think we're going to go ahead and go take a break. You are listening to Tokens Radio Show on 1460 AM and 96.5 FM, and we'll see you in a few minutes.
Here I am, on the road again. There I am, up on the stage. Here I go, playing star again. There I go, turn the page.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope, but that's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works. You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Good day. Welcome to this week's Town Hall News Brief. I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host, to provide the latest local updates. Shasta County Sheriff's Office has reclassified Nikki Chang Saley McCain's disappearance as a homicide investigation after nearly 10 months. Family members, including her sister Kay Ford, had the difficult task of informing McCain's four children, ages 8 to 13, about this development. Three organizations, Kingsman Philanthropic Corp, Shasta County Secret Witness, and Redding Rancheria, are each offering $10,000 rewards for information. Brian Fitzgibbons from Kingsman noted the timeline is typical for no-body homicide cases as investigators gather evidence. A support network of about 15 people continues collecting tips from the public to pass to authorities. Ford reports more people are now coming forward with information since the case was reclassified as homicide. The family is beginning the mourning process while maintaining confidence in the ongoing investigation. As one family's tragedy unfolds, the county is also addressing a broader public health emergency. Shasta County's Board of Supervisors unanimously approved a $4 million agreement with the Community Opioid Response and Education Corps group to combat the local opioid crisis. The collaboration, led by Board Chair Kevin Cry, partners with various community organizations, including Youth Options and Raising Shasta. Following a comprehensive needs assessment that identified significant gaps in prevention, the initiative will launch a community-wide education campaign and recruit mentors for local youth. Columbia School District Superintendent Clay Ross likened the needed determination to the community's response during the car fire. While tackling present crisis, county officials are also making decisions that will reshape Redding's future landscape. Shasta County
County supervisors voted 4-1 to demolish the vacant 1950s-era courthouse in downtown Reading, with demolition expected to begin in summer 2026 at a cost of approximately $5.3 million. Funding will come from the $34 million previously allocated for jail expansion. The lone dissenter, Supervisor Chris Kellstrom, suggested selling the property instead, while Supervisor Matt Plummer expressed concerns about potential residential development overlooking the neighboring jail. The board decided to discuss plans for the site after demolition. The courthouse, built in 1956, has been vacant since early 2024, when the new courthouse opened across the street. Unlike a previous meeting where many residents advocated preserving the building for historical value, Tuesday's meeting saw fewer public comments. In another reversal of county affairs, Shasta County's Board of Supervisors reversed their position on an election reform ballot measure, agreeing to prepare the required title and summary and drop a lawsuit against the measure's five sponsors. This decision came 2 days after a judge denied the county's request to delay work on the measure, calling their legal arguments sparse and deficient. The proposed ballot measure intends to bring back hand-counting votes, restrict absentee ballots, and finalize election results on election night or shortly after. The county had previously raised concerns that the measure conflicts with state and federal laws, including the California Constitution and multiple election codes. Supporters of the ballot measure now have 180 days to collect approximately 8,600 signatures to advance their initiative. Find more local stories on our social media, Shasta Lake Town Hall on Facebook, at Town Hall News on X, and mountaintopmedia.com. From all of us at Town Hall Brief, thanks for listening.
Give welcome back.
We're going to give them something to talk about.
Yes, indeed.
Gotta love her. All right. Now, while the government is figuring out its rules for crypto, some countries are taking things a step further. Take El Salvador. They're not just allowing Bitcoin. They're actually creating special loans called Bitcoin bonds that are tied to it. Think of it as the country's betting on Bitcoin as part of its financial strategy. But what actually are these Bitcoin bonds? And could they actually help countries that are struggling with money problems? Let's explain what these bonds are in plain English and look at both the possible rewards and real risk involved in these. So, what are they? What are Bitcoin bonds? Bitcoin bonds are basically loans that are somehow tied to Bitcoin. Excuse me. When you buy a regular bond, you're lending money to the government or company who promises to pay you back with interest. With Bitcoin bonds, that payback is connected to Bitcoin's value in some way. Can they save economies?
Economies, yes. Economies. It's like normies.
Economies. Economies.
Yeah.
Some people claim Bitcoin bonds could rescue struggling economies, but that's a stretch. Here's why. If Bitcoin price, and we were just talking about this, goes up a lot, both the bond issuer and the investor could make good money.
Yeah, isn't that like betting on growing a company's stock, but at a national scale, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead.
Well, if El Salvador bought Bitcoin at 80,000 and it rises to 150, for instance, they've nearly doubled their money without raising taxes or cutting programs, right?
Right.
Yeah.
They might help countries borrow money at a lower interest rate.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Not all countries are, it's just like people. Some countries have high credit ratings and some have low.
Yeah.
And it could make a big difference for the ones that are on the lower end.
Right. And what they pay higher interest rates because of their poor credit, right?
Right, yeah.
So what would Bitcoin bonds do? They might attract investors willing to accept lower guaranteed returns in exchange for potential Bitcoin gains. And that seems like a good trade-off, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You know, knowing you're going to get Bitcoin is better than maybe repossessing a car or something like that, right? I would rather repossess a Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know,
it wouldn't.
If you defaulted on a loan I gave you, right on, and Bitcoin's the collateral, I'll take the Bitcoin any day.
Yep, exactly. And there could be a way to protect against regular currencies losing value.
Yeah. So when the governments, I guess, print too much money, each dollar buys less over time. That's what we're experiencing now. And, you know, egg prices, gasoline. I mean, the egg prices aren't tied to the things that most people are talking about. It's because our dollar doesn't buy as much, and they're killing all of the frickin' chickens out there.
Yeah, they did millions of them.
Yeah, which is just, anyway, a whole different issue. But when your dollar goes down in value, you buy less. And so when we print too much money, you know, the dollar buys less. But Bitcoin is a fixed supply. Has only 21 million will ever exist. That's not going to change. So some see it as protection against this inflation system, or problem, I should say, not system.
Right.
Now, here's the downside. So Bitcoin's price is all over the place right now. It could drop 70% in a year. We've seen that.
It's kind of like it. If your house loses value overnight, what's going to happen?
Well, we got through it, didn't we? We saw that in 2008.
We did.
Yes, and we've seen it in Bitcoin. And what happens, and it's very similar to the real estate market, as a matter of fact, when we have a tremendous drop like that, we generally have a gain that surpasses the high before the previous drop.
Right, yes.
And that's what's going on with Bitcoin. So, so you just mentioned that. Imagine your house losing its value overnight. Well, Bitcoin, countries betting on Bitcoin face that risk too. El Salvador was buying at $60,000, would have seen their investment drop to $16,000 in 2022, potentially making their debt problems worse. You know, even if all the Bitcoin exists, or even all the Bitcoin that exists, $17 billion worth seized by the U.S. is a tiny fraction compared to huge government debts of $35 trillion for what we're dealing with in the United States.
Yeah, it's kind of like filling a swimming pool with a garden hose. Even the entire Bitcoin market, which is around, $2 trillion?
Yeah, at its peak.
Yeah, it's just a fraction of the global government debt, making it unlikely to solve major financial problems for large economies.
Yeah, and there are lots of legal and practical hurdles to overcome. You know, most financial systems weren't built with cryptocurrencies in mind.
No.
Yeah.
So we need to have the laws change.
Right.
And we've been asking for not just new regulations, but regulations that we know and, you know, that are clear, and build technical systems to handle those bonds, which could take years and face resistance from traditional financial players. But the banks are starting to get involved in the whole crypto thing, too. So it may not be that long, but it could take a bit.
I bet you they can get the Doge team to go ahead and build a technical system. So let's talk about El Salvador's volcano bonds. You know, it's a real example. They're actually trying this experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the basics. They want to raise $1 billion through 10-year bonds. Now, for a small country like El Salvador, $1 billion is a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
It's about 3.5% of their entire economy. And it's like a family earning $50,000 a year, taking out a $1,750 loan to invest in something they hope will grow. And
investors get about 6.5% interest yearly.
Yeah.
Paid in U.S. dollars.
Yeah.
This rate is actually lower than what El Salvador was paying on traditional bonds, which approached 30% during crisis periods, showing how they're using Bitcoin's appeal to try getting cheaper loans.
Hint, hint, IMF. And half the money, $500 million, would build a Bitcoin city near a volcano. Now, This is a planned tax-free zone where crypto businesses can operate without traditional regulations. El Salvador's got tremendous incentives to come there and open a business. It's similar to special economic zones that help develop places like Shenzhen in China, but focus specifically on cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm. The other half would be used to buy Bitcoin. The government essentially becoming a Bitcoin investment fund, betting public money on cryptocurrency gains. It's unprecedented for a national government to put such a large portion of borrowed money directly into a speculative asset.
And again, I mentioned the IMF there because they're strong-arming.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, they're strong-arming El Salvador. And what do? They go out and they buy more.
Yeah.
And the plan is after 5 years, they plan to sell some Bitcoin and share profits with investors. And, you know, this creates a unique situation where bond investors are actually partners in the country's Bitcoin investment strategy, which is really cool, with returns potentially much higher than traditional bonds if prices rise significantly. So why a volcano? They plan to use the energy from actual volcanoes to power Bitcoin mining operations, which is where the name comes from. And we happen to know somebody personally who was consulting on that project. Mm-hmm. What was it, in 2021? When they were talking about how to tap into the volcano's geothermal energy and run Bitcoin mining. So,
and we've talked about that in the past with mining.
Yeah, we had them on the show, too, at one point in time.
Right. So the situation, one, El Salvador is a small country, economy of $28.4 billion.
Mm-hmm.
They use U.S. dollars, not their own currency.
Yeah.
Three, they were having trouble with regular bonds. Investors thought they may not pay.
IMF.
That's going to be your word for the day.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Yep, and four, their president sees this as a way to avoid IMF loans and their strict conditions.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah.
There you go. Yep.
So where things stand, the bonds are announced in 2021, but still haven't been properly launched.
Yep, that's where we were talking about this gentleman. His name Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, the multiple delays raise questions about El Salvador's ability to execute such. Man, this is an innovative product.
It is,
and it also suggests that investor demand might be weaker than initially hoped, despite President Bukele's enthusiasm.
Bitcoin fans think it's bold and exciting.
Yeah, the crypto community sees it as validation of Bitcoin's potential as a national economic strategy, and if successful, it can create a blueprint for other countries to follow, potentially changing how government manages their finances. Just think about how innovative it is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's tap into this volcano. How often have we been talking about what we can tap into our resources right here in our county?
Right.
We have a lot of things we can tap into.
You know, you stop and
if
think
we have
about
the
it.
Right converter to tap into it, right?
We could actually tap into volcano.
We have volcanoes.
With volcanoes.
Exactly.
We do.
Yeah, that would work.
Not quite as easy, but all right. But there, you know, traditional investors think it's too risky. Bond markets traditionally value stability and predictability. Above all, introducing Bitcoin's volatility, fundamentally changing the risk profile in ways that conservative pension funds and institutional investors are uncomfortable with. It's so outside their box, they don't know how to handle it.
Right.
They don't know how to look at it or anything. If Bitcoin's price shoots up to $150,000, everyone could win big.
Yeah.
And
well, if they, El Salvador could potentially pay off significant portions of its national debt, fund infrastructure without borrowing, and investors will see returns. I mean, it's fantastic. It's
yeah,
a win-win situation.
What would people think here if we started paying off our own debt and we got out of debt with Bitcoin?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a possibility.
I think so, too. If Bitcoin crashes, El Salvador's debt problem could even get worse, though.
Yeah, it can. I mean, they already struggle with poverty and debt repayment, and a Bitcoin crash can mean that they've spent valuable borrowed money on a failed experiment. But you know what? They've got Bitcoin in the bank, too, so I'm not too worried about that. And the bottom line, Bitcoin bonds are more of a risky experiment than a proven solution, and they might help some countries in specific situations, but they're not going to magically fix massive economic problems. And so we've even talked about, you know, some sort of treasury bonds here or what was it you were talking about before? What's the gentleman's name? You mentioned it before, some treasury bond.
Lutnick.
No. He's a reporter. Oh, well.
Sorry, I'm lost, too.
It's an old brain. Anyway, El Salvador has taken a big gamble, and we'll have to wait and see if it pays off. So let's pivot on here. We're going to hear from one of Bitcoin's biggest cheerleaders, Michael Saylor. In a recent interview, Saylor, who runs a company that's invested billions in Bitcoin, also it's called Strategy now. It used to be MicroStrategy. He believes the world will soon split into two camps, countries that jump on the Bitcoin bandwagon and those who fight against it. We've already seen that. And so he thinks buying Bitcoin today is like when America bought the Louisiana Territory back in 1803, a massive opportunity that comes along maybe once in a lifetime. So let's talk, let's listen to this very shortcut. It's about 25 seconds. And this is Michael Saylor talking with Pete Rizzo on the Supply Shock podcast. And he explains where he thinks Bitcoin's changing everything and moving faster than most people can keep up with. So here we go.
Well, I'm an aeronautical engineer, and we design airplanes. And if you create a supersonic airplane, you create a shock wave. Supersonic means the plane is moving faster than the rate at which the air can communicate or get out of the way. So when something is moving too fast, you have turbulence, you have shock wave, you have a lot of noise. What you're seeing here is the Bitcoin shock wave.
Yep, that was it, the Bitcoin shockwave. Just a very short clip of just how much of a shock it is to the system. And I love how he had talked about the turbulence.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, he believes the shockwave is forcing everyone with money, from big banks to governments, to answer an uncomfortable question.
Yeah, this was, about a 50-second clip?
Yeah. Here we go.
That is indicative of just how much power they have. They're not being asked whether or not they're going to put cobalt in the Swiss National Reserves. But I think everybody with a pool of capital is going to be asked by activists in their own country, by activists in their own company, by their shareholders, why aren't you buying Bitcoin? And what you'll see is the world will bifurcate, right? You had an extraordinary, innovative moment in the White House a few weeks ago, where what you saw was the president saying, we're going to embrace the future, and the president puts his finger on the world's first digital commodity and identifies it and says, this is not a bad thing, this is a good thing, we're going to own it, we're not going to sell it, we're going to get as much of it as we can get.
Yeah, we're going to get as much of it as we can get. The reporter I was talking about was Bill Still. Yeah. So he's an interesting dude.
Yeah, he's been around a long time.
Yeah, he has. So Saylor went on to talk about how countries are splitting into two camps, those who embrace Bitcoin and those who are afraid of it. He compared Bitcoin buying to when we mentioned earlier the Louisiana Territory.
Right. Yeah, he did.
Calling it a chance to own a part of the digital future. And according to Saylor, the choice is simple. Either get in now and benefit, or watch others take control of what he sees as the foundation of tomorrow's economy. And this is just another short little clip, about 27 seconds.
So the opportunity is simply buy it, buy as much of it as you want to own, and then allow the passage of time to enrich you. And then I think the threat is, right, the risk is, don't buy it. How would you feel if your enemy made $80 trillion and owned the network or control the network? The worst case would be they make 80 or 100 trillion, they control the network, they own cyberspace, you don't.
Yeah, you don't.
It's simple.
Yeah.
Saylor also outlined in his vision for the future where Bitcoin leads a new digital economy with trillions of dollars flowing into various digital assets. He suggested that America has a chance to lead this transformation, but only if it creates clear rules that encourage innovation rather than stifling it. Excuse me. As the interview wrapped up, Saylor mentioned that even after years of studying Bitcoin, he is still discovering new things about it daily.
Yes.
Comparing this ongoing discovery to a scientist uncovering the secrets of the universe. As we've heard from Michael Saylor today, he views Bitcoin not just as an investment, but as a fundamental shift in how value is stored and transferred in the digital age. Whether his vision of the world divided between Bitcoin adopters and lagdards comes true remains to be seen. But his comparison to historical opportunities like the Louisiana Purchase offers food for thought about the potential long-term significance of this digital asset.
Threw a curveball in there.
Yeah. I had that kind of like, I like it. I like it. Lagtards.
Well, it's laggards, really. But
lagtards.
We could change it to lagtards. Yeah. I like that one better.
Yeah.
So we've got a clip coming up here, and what Saylor is basically saying, Bitcoin outshines everything else in the financial world. He thinks it's like the brightest star in the sky, pulling in money from all directions. And according to Saylor, people and big companies are selling off things like real estate, gold, and stocks to buy Bitcoin instead. He believes Bitcoin works better for our modern digital world than old school investments. In his view, Bitcoin is simply the best way to store your wealth and make transactions in today's digital age, making traditional investments look like outdated relics from the last century. And, you know, he is the leader. He is walking his talk.
Yes, he does.
He certainly is. So why don't we listen to this? It's just a shortcut. It's about a minute long.
Okay.
And here we go.
Bitcoin is the brightest thing in the financial universe. Heat and light. It's the most interesting. It's growing stronger. It's growing hotter. It's growing denser as it draws the capital of the world into its orbit. What capital? Physical capital. People are selling their buildings. Financial capital. They're going to trade out their low-grade bonds, their currencies in third world and the second world. Foreign capital. They're going to sell their Siberian warehouses and their Russian natural gas rights. It's drawing antiquated capital, the capital of the 20th century. It's drawing smart capital. Anybody that thought about it thought, do I want to be invested in something that's going to decay or be destroyed over time by 100 uncertain risks, or do I want to just keep my money in cyberspace? And then digital capital. The AIs, they don't get the bank account. As the economy digitizes, people want to move digital money at the speed of light. With a million transactions a second, you're not doing it with a Siberian warehouse. You're not doing it with natural gas or gold. You're not going to do it with any 20th century asset.
What we're hearing from Saylor, and this is an incredibly optimistic view of Bitcoin's future. He sees Bitcoin not just as another investment option, but as something that's fundamentally better than everything else out there. In his eyes, Bitcoin is like a financial magnet drawing money away from old school assets like real estate and gold.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Well, many experts would call this view extreme. Saylor's perspective does highlight something really important, the growing role digital assets might play in our increasingly online world. Traditional assets weren't designed for the Internet age, and Saylor believes Bitcoin fills that gap perfectly.
And whether or not Bitcoin truly becomes the brightest financial asset remains to be seen. But Saylor's passionate conviction certainly gives us something to think about as we watch this space continue to evolve.
And that brings us to the end of today's content. We covered a lot of ground, didn't we, exploring Bitcoin, digital assets. I feel like we were hypersonic, right? You know, supersonic, you know, like he was talking about as an aerospace engineer.
But that's where it's going. Yeah. That's the whole thing with the Bitcoin. I'm just now understanding that.
Yeah.
The Lightning Network and all that.
Oh, sure.
It's a lot to wrap your head around.
And he said, you know, it's just he's still learning. And I love that that honesty and humbleness from him, because he is willing to say what he doesn't know. I mean, we started just recap, we started looking at China's economic struggles and how they might impact the global financial landscape. Then we heard from Donald Trump's vision for cryptocurrency in America, promising less regulation and more innovation. Doggone it, he is trying, but there are just some judges trying to get in the way. And we also broke down Bitcoin bonds in simple terms, these experimental financial tools that countries like El Salvador is testing with both exciting possibilities and serious risks attached to them. I mean, it could be a project that just blows up and causes catastrophic problems for a country. And, of course, we heard from Michael Saylor, who painted Bitcoin as nothing short as revolutionary, comparing it to America's Louisiana Purchase. Yep. You know, we've heard that many, many times, and I find it interesting that it keeps getting repeated because I think that's huge. It's an analogy to keep in your mind because we picked up a huge land mass, so 200 years ago for pennies on the dollar comparatively to trillions.
Right.
And we called it the brightest asset in the financial universe. So whether you're a Bitcoin believer or a skeptic, one thing seems clear. Digital assets are becoming an increasingly important part of our economic conversation.
They sure
it are. Is not putting this genie back in the bottle.
No.
It is not going away.
Yeah, everything is evolving.
Yeah.
And you have to learn to kind of see what's happening here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little scary. Yeah. And like you say, Michael Saylor at least admitted he doesn't know everything. We tell it's a learn, you know, everybody's learning. We're all learning.
Yeah.
We've never been here. Nobody has.
I'm thinking about Peter St. Ong too and talking about China, especially with all of his work. You know, he's an economist, but he's definitely, into Bitcoin and he talks often about Bitcoin.
Yes, he does.
But where he pivoted to China this week was interesting to me. This is not the first time we've heard it, but I'm thinking why it's being talked about now is that it's gotten more severe. They were building buildings that no one was occupying, huge commercial towers that doesn't have any tenants.
Right. Also, and the workmanship behind it, on one of our podcasts, we showed where the buildings are crumbling and
that's
everything.
It. Yes.
You know, because workmanship, they're not using them at the whole nine.
Right. Yeah. And then the 500 electric vehicle companies
I could not believe that.
That's outrageous.
Yeah. That's crazy.
I know we've got a few offhanded names here in this country, but generally, you know what the big ones are, and you've got... You have electric vehicles with the main, you know, the main names, you know, GM and Ford and all of that. Of course, Tesla is at the top. But
right.
Then you've got some other, you know, other names that are like, what is that? Never heard. We rode in one down in L.A.,
yes,
remember?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
We did. But, you know, even in the height of our automotive industry, we didn't have 500 different companies.
Yeah.
And we were strong with... You know, I don't know how many we had. We had the big ones, you know, four or five, and there was probably little ones. But
20, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
500? Holy moly. What do you think's going to happen? It's kind of like the money thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you keep flooding everybody with the money, is it going to be worth it or... everybody's not going to be interested in it.
Imagine directing all of that talent to be able to create all of that ingenuity and entrepreneurship, but really unleash it in a free society. Can you imagine all of that brain trust working together? I mean,
yeah.
To put together 500 companies that are competing against each other, wow.
That's crazy.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's outrageous. So, yeah, this is pretty cool. The Bitcoin bond thing, I don't know. You think that that's going to happen anytime soon?
I think they'll dip their toe in it. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're bold enough to give it a whirl. I really do.
Yeah, I think so. Some interesting things that you're going to be watching. Hester Pierce, she's with the SEC, and she's been just unwinding some things. And she's not even the secretary. She just works in the crypto division. And she's been doing some interesting work and coming out and talking about some of those things this week. So hopefully they'll develop into something here that we'll bring and share with you. There's just so much that we power through every week, you know, to try to pick, oh, this is interesting. That's it. Oh, this has got to go. This is outdated. This is just moving fast.
The news cycle is, out of control. And with that, we're coming to the end of the show. Thanks for tuning in today. We look forward to joining you next week. Until then, take care and remember, the financial world waits for no one.
But he came to save the day when he wrote about the way things are and the way things ought to be. He gave us all a protocol this world had never seen. Oh, Bitcoin, as you're going into the old blockchain. Oh, Bitcoin, I know you're going to rain, going to rain.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life. Your health. Your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.